Okay, we're going to go ahead and start the Senate CRA committee meeting. It is about 3 after 9. Members present, Senator Adams, Senator Zuroff, Senator Phillips. Gentlemen, we're going to have a long day today. We have a lot of interest in these three bills. And for those who are on the teleconference, please keep your statements short. I want to hear everybody. We want to hear everybody. But we have a lot of work to do today.
Which one are you starting with?
Okay, the first one we're going to take is HB 543, unvetted gas heaters in residential buildings. And do we have the sponsor of the bill?
HB what?
543. This one. This is unvetted gas heaters in residential buildings.
Warren and Tom should be up here pretty quick.
Okay, your name and affiliation, please.
My name is Joseph Esau, and I work for Representative Al Veazey. Representative Veazey is not in the city this morning, so I will be presenting this for him. We appreciate you taking the opportunity to hear this bill. We'll try to be very brief and to the point. House Bill 543 basically is simply to allow the uses of unvented gas-fired room heaters in residential dwellings in the state of Alaska. It basically mandates that these heaters must meet the requirements and standards of the American National Standards Institute under Z21.11.2. These room heaters have been in existence for more than 30 years in Europe. There are more than 2.5 million of them in use in the United States since 1981. And I might add that without any instances of fatalities attributable to unvented gas heaters, not manufactured for manufactured for indoor use. Unvented gas heaters are safer than vented gas heaters. That information comes from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The benefits of using unvented gas heaters are quite simple. First of all, they're cheaper to use than heating fuel and electricity. They're nearly 100% efficient. We'll talk a little bit about the safety aspects here. Carbon monoxide produced by vent-free gas heaters is about 1/4 of that produced by a gas cook stove in your home kitchen. Some of the concerns, legitimate concerns I might add, has to do with carbon monoxide and the development of carbon monoxide into these heaters inside a residential home. Especially in our climate, where we tend to construct in an airtight situation, or we try to. And this issue has pretty much been addressed by American Gas Association testing laboratories, which is recognized by the ANSI standards. All appliances must be listed or certified products which meet these standards, so they go through this rigid standard. Gas heaters are allowed and accepted by all of the national recognized code, including the Council on American Building Standards, Building Officials and Code Administrators International, Southern Building Code, Congress International, and IPCO, or International Congress Conference of Building Officials, is the only national model code that does not allow vent-free gas appliances. That also happens to be the code that we use under the Uniform Mechanical Code. Their opposition is pretty simple. It states that their concern is with the moisture that develops into these things and condensation, which may affect what's known as the oxygen depletion sensor. And in the testing, there's nothing to substantiate those claims or concerns. These heaters are in great use in the eastern part of the United States, in some of our major cities, Atlanta, Philadelphia, New Jersey. Cities throughout the state of North Carolina. The primary concern that we've heard has to deal with carbon monoxide. And quite simply, at the risk of sounding redundant, these stoves produce, or heaters produce, less than what your ordinary kitchen stove will produce, cooking for four-member family.
Does that conclude your remarks?
That about concludes my remarks, yes.
For the record, Senator Taylor and Senator Lehman are here. Question? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a Keith Kettler from Colorado. Could you state your name and affiliation, please?
Yes, my name is Keith Kettler, K-E-T-T-L-E-R, from Baltimore, Colorado, as a marketing director for Kentex Products of California.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning concerning House Bill 543. I'd like to echo what Mr. Esau just said, and that is that unvented gas heaters are damaged products. There are many manufacturers of these. We're Kentex is in the fireplace business, and we make unvented fireplaces. There are 18 manufacturers of vent-free fireplaces, and additionally, there are probably a dozen or so more who make only the unvented heaters. These appliances are approved by every building code used in the United States, except the Uniform Mechanical Code that you use in Alaska. I also want you to know that in many areas where the Uniform Mechanical Code is used, building officials have approved these appliances as alternate materials, which they can do. Examples where this has been done include Anchorage and Kenai, Alaska, some cities in Washington State, Colorado, Wyoming, and Idaho, which the Uniform Mechanical Code is primarily used in Western states. And in all of these areas, including where I live in Colorado, all new construction is built to the unusually tight construction standards like you are using in Alaska. These appliances are tested by the American Gas Association to the ANSI standards that Mr. Esau spoke about. The standard was developed by a committee, including people from such organizations as the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials, the National Fire Protection Association, Underwriters Labs, Consumer Product Safety Commission, and some others. The safety is ensured in these appliances by requiring in the ANSI standard that each of them has to have an oxygen depletion sensor, which ensures there cannot be a buildup of carbon monoxide. And it does this by monitoring the oxygen level in the room, since oxygen and carbon monoxide operate in inverse directions. The ODS works. It has a track record in Europe going back to the early 60s and in the United States going back to 1981. And it is designed so that, number one, there cannot be any adjustments that can be made to it. And that's a requirement of the ANSI standard. And also, it's designed so that if it fails for any reason, it fails in the safe or the closed position. Combustion air for these appliances is required, just like any gas appliance. In Chapter 6 of the Uniform Mechanical Code, requires requirements for 50 cubic feet of free air space per 1,000 BTU. So there's nothing unique about this. These products are engineered and built from the bottom up to burn very, very clean. As Mr. Ebo said, the standard allows only one-fourth as much carbon monoxide as the gas truck range, which we've used for 50 years, I guess. There have now been over 2.6 million ODS-equipped vent-free appliances sold in the United States since 1981. And the Consumer Product Safety Commission, who keeps track of these kinds of things, has not found a linkage of a single carbon monoxide fatality to one of these. There are standard products well accepted, and in fact, they are marketed in the lower 48 by over 50 public utilities. The main byproducts of these heaters are, first of all, heat. Second of all, carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is a compound that we exhale for breathing. Has no danger whatsoever. And the third is water vapor. A byproduct of any combustion is water vapor. Although I want you to understand that the humidity that is created by this is generally seen as a positive byproduct, and it's less than half of that produced by a normal home humidifier. It is only a small amount of the normal water vapor that we create by cooking and bathing and breathing in our homes and so forth.
Never frown as long as it's
not. There are almost no maintenance. The only maintenance that's required is typically to take a vacuum cleaner and vacuum the dust off the appliance periodically as it accumulates. And the efficiency level of these, according to the U.S. Department of Energy is 99.9%. So we're talking about a plant that has an established track record, a proven safety record, the most efficient option on the market in the United States today, and they're absolutely safe. This concludes my formal testimony, unless you have a specific question about the products or anything that I've said.
Question? Okay, yeah, Mr. Keith Kettle, we are going to have another hearing on this Thursday, so you might want to dial in to listen to the opposition.
I'd be glad to do that. I'd be glad to respond to the opposition if given an opportunity also.
That's why I'm suggesting that you dial in.
You mean there's somebody that opposes this?
Okay, Danny Knowles from Anchorage.
I guess my affiliation is that we are probably
coming
here in Anchorage.
Whoa. Is this Danny Knowles?
Yes.
Okay, would you state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Okay, my name is Danny Knowles, and I am part of a mechanical company here in Anchorage, Wanagon Heating.
Okay,
the way the bill was originally written, so I was informed, was it says unvented gas heater. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Okay, now I'm hearing them talk strictly about a room gas heater. If that is the case, then they need to specify that it's strictly a room gas heater, not an unvented gas heater, because that would incorporate many different types. We need to specify which kind you guys are referring to. Because we got word that it was strictly unvented gas heaters and not just room heaters. So we were concerned that you were talking about forced air heating because of the setup in a home, which is a concern of ours as far as carbon monoxide poisoning. Like I said, I did not realize that you were strictly talking room heaters. So I'm not very versed on that particular aspect as Keith is. So my position right now is it needs to be specified what type of gas heaters you are referring to. Because stating as this is gas heaters, you're opening up to a very wide category. And that's basically all I have to say at this point since I'm not very well versed on room heaters.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Is this Mr. Kettle?
Yes, it is. May I respond to that, please?
Go right ahead.
The verbiage in the bill makes it very clear that the standard is the gas-fired room heater bill, the ANSI C2111.2, and I just want the committee members to understand that that's what the bill is about.
Any questions for Ms. Knowles?
I have a question for Kettle.
Mr. Taylor to Mr. Kettle.
Mr. Kettle, can you tell me what... what is the significant difference between the type of heater that the lady was addressing, who spoke just before you there, and the type of heater that you are promoting?
Sir, I'm not sure. I've never heard of any gas vent-free heater or unvented heater that is other than a room heater. There's only one ANSI standard that I'm aware of for gas-fired room heaters, and that's the ANSI Z21-11.2 standard. There is no product that I'm aware of, sir.
Yeah.
That is an unvented heater that is like a cold house furnace system of any kind. And in fact, in this ANSI standard, it limits the size of these only 40,000 BTUs. So we're certainly not talking about a whole house furnace, and that is not the intent of the bill, nor would those be allowed under the Z21-11.2 standard.
Ms. Knowles, do you care to respond to that?
My only response would be is we have a lot of people out here that install their own heating systems without a contractor being involved, and those people need to be made aware that this for not venting can occur. We hate to see anything happen to anybody because they think they can do it this way. And then we're going to end up getting phone calls or, you know, things are going to start changing for codes and so forth. So this was our concern because there's so many people out there that work on their own heating systems, install their own. We get many calls from people wanting to outright buy a furnace that they can put in themselves. So it needs to be clarified that this can be vented or unvented. We don't want anybody out there doing something, you know.
Ms. Knowles, who do you, again, represent?
I work for a plumbing and heating company in Anchorage.
Plumbing and heating?
Okay. Yeah, mechanical.
At which one?
It's called Mountain Mechanical.
Okay, I don't think we have a letter from you guys.
No.
I'd appreciate it if you would... fax us a copy of your testimony down here, 465-4979.
Okay, will do.
Okay, thank you.
I'm still concerned.
Mr. Taylor? Ms. Knowles, hang on.
I'm still concerned, Ms. Knowles, about... you're talking in terms of furnaces that would heat an entire house and someone misinstalling that furnace. sounds like this gentleman from Colorado is talking about a room heater that will not generate more than 40,000 BTUs.
Well, that's small, so I require 40,000 BTUs.
Yeah, that would seem like a small furnace or a small thing to me.
Right, it would be, but the only concern is, goes back to, will people understand, you know, if this size of furnace, that they can do it, if they do it themselves, are they going to vent it or not vent it?
Well, I understand that confusion, but the bill would not address any of the furnace. Let me ask you a different way. Do you sell any of these type furnaces?
We do not outright sell. We are not a retailer.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Install.
You just install then.
Right.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'm trying to understand where the confusion is between the two, that somehow people might get tricked by us changing the law.
Mr. Taylor, we're going to have quite a few people coming in on Thursday to give the opposite point of view. So, Ms. Knowles, does that conclude your testimony?
Yes, it does.
Okay, I would appreciate it if you would fax us that testimony, and we'll give it to the members of the committee.
Okay,
so I have everything. Is there anybody on the teleconference site for HB 543, unvented gas heaters? Okay, hearing none. Anybody here in Juneau to testify on 543? Okay, we're going to hold this bill over to Thursday. We're going to continue more public testimony on the bill. And Thursday, we'll bring this bill up again at 9 a.m. Teleconference sites will be open, as well as this committee room at 9 a.m. Thursday. Now we're going to go ahead and take up Mr. Starra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe on Thursday, I'd like to have somebody address, if they would, the safety measures or devices that go along with this, not necessarily with the unit, but I mean, we make sure there that in residential units that smoke alarms are there gas detecting machines or carbon dioxide monoxide detecting devices that you may also wish to incorporate into the bill as an amendment to make these as a requirement if you're going to use unvented heaters of this sort.
I hate to tell me the fire marshal will be here Thursday. Also, I want to add that representatives from NSTAR Natural Gas will be here to testify on the bill itself. So some of those questions you're asking will be more appropriate for these people. And there'll be technical people here Thursday to deal with it. Okay, any other questions be brought up? Any concerns? Any requests? Okay. We're going to go ahead and take up House Bill 259, General Land Grants Entitlements. This is basically the Lake Peninsula Borough proposal to the legislature on land entitlements. Can I have the sheet for the bill, please? Sign-in sheet. Okay. Do we have anybody from Mr. Moses' office?
Okay. We've got two.
Okay. Where's the other one?
No, two.
Oh, I know. Go ahead.
Both the same, huh?
State your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Karen Brand. I'm staff for Representative Moses. He will be here momentarily. I'd like to give you a brief outline of the bill, and then I'll take any questions that you might have. Basically, House Bill 259 statutorily authorizes 187,000 acres as an entitlement for the Lake and Peninsula Borough, and it gives the borough until October lands for that entitlement. The figure 187,000 acres represents a little less than 3% of the total state lands within the borough. And because the Lake and Penn has been trying to promote, or rather trying to get away from being so dependent on the price of fish, it has identified these lands with the intent to move into other areas.
ODS, that, I don't know what that
means. Mr. Taylor, wait. Keep going.
The Borough Assembly and the Planning Commission have developed a comprehensive borough plan and have identified certain lands of interest to them. Alaska statute currently provides a section that for newly incorporated boroughs to pick out their land entitlements. However, in this case, the Lake and Penn has very little vacant, unreserved, and unappropriated land within their borough or within their boundaries. Because other state lands would need to be reclassified before reconveyance to the borough, this method of simply adding their entitlement to the list already in statute is a little bit shorter process. In addition, the formula in Title 29 that determines land entitlements for newly formed boroughs has not been an effective tool for the department in calculating that number. DNR has instead encouraged boroughs to work with their planning commissions and then come to the department and work with them in either reclassifying the lands and reconveying them or selecting other lands. Up until this time, Lake and Penn has been the only borough that has gone through this process with the Department of Natural Resources. Because the land selection process and statute in Title 29 would be very time-consuming, simply adding their entitlement to the list in statute would be a little bit shorter. You'll see in your packet that both DCRA and DNR have included zero fiscal notes, and DNR has testified in the past that even though that there would be additional work involved in reconveying more acreage, that's still within their purview. So HB 259 only addresses Lake and Penn Borough. It does not apply to any other boroughs or municipalities. And Representative Moses would appreciate consideration today. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond. Or there are also some other folks here. Lamar Cotton with Lake and Penn Borough and Ron Swanson with DNR are here.
Okay. Questions? See, there's a representative from Mr. Jackal's office. Do you care to make a statement? Is there anybody else from Representative Moses' office here?
Well, appear to me that the title's awfully narrow.
Yes. Mr. We're going to go on the teleconference side. First person to have is Jeff Parker from Anchorage. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. This is Jeff Parker. I'm Jeff's sign today for the Anchorage Fishing Advisory Committee, and also we're on the Alaska Sport Fishing Association. I'm on their board, and Trout Unlimited and State Council. I'm Vice President of the State Council. We urge you to hold this bill primarily for another round of hearings. We think that it should also be referred to Senate Resources. I will also be submitting today a petition of 430 signatures that we got over the weekend opposing HB 259. Our concerns primarily are that there are many types of changes coming at the Bristol Bay drainages, not only from the Lake and Penn borough interests, but also from a prospective new borough in the Nushagak drainages, in the Nushagak drainage, from Alakis in Woodchick State Park, who seek to trade out of the state park into lands in the Nushagak and Quijack drainages, to the university lands bill, to the mental health lands settlement. Those are five interests that are all competing for any particular acre that has economic value. We think that it is in the best interest of the public to, and from residents of this area to residents of that area, to non-residents who are visitors from outside of the state, to have an opportunity to see what the final land picture, land ownership pattern is going to look like when these five entities all settle upon their lands. What this bill essentially is, and the reason why we oppose it, is that it invites piecemeal decision-making as to what the final land ownership pattern is going to be. We think that is not the way that the state should make its decisions about how land should be owned and by whom, how it should be managed in such critical drainages as the Bristol Bay drainage. In the final analysis, there is little land in these drainages that has economic value other than that which is along rivers. And we appreciate that the borough has expressed its willingness to back off of critical areas for public use, whether it's recreation or subsistence or commercial recreational use. But that begs the question of where else the borough will end up putting in selections. We think that it's almost unavoidable the borough, if given a land entitlement of 187,000 acres, will end up on lands that are critical for a variety of uses. And we think you should be asking the question, if the borough says it is willing to back off, for example, the Mulchatna or Lower Tulare, onto which lands is it willing to back off? Where would it go? Until you can answer that question for the public, we think this is unwise legislation. We also appreciate that the borough has said that it will not dispose of lands, but it only plans to lease for new department, and therefore we do not give much credence to the borough's present pledge that it will not develop the land. We think a lot of things, and that it needs 187,000 acres in order to lease to new lodges. We think that the final picture really that the borough anticipates is eventual long-term disposal of land around Lake Iliana. That will be very difficult for the recreational industry to accommodate. It will increase user conflicts between rural and non-resident people. It will increase conflicts between the commercial sport fishing industries. It will increase conflicts between guided and unguided recreation. In an area that is important for fish and wildlife and Bristol Bay drainages, that should not be the legislature's prescription for the future. Thank you.
Questions before the committee? Mr. Parker, this committee or this bill has been referred to three committees in the House. We're having a hearing today. We're going to have another one on Thursday, possibly next week. And you still feel that not enough public testimony has been added to this?
Yes, with all due respect, Senator, I think that the villages in the Bristol Bay drainages with whom we're working now, I know they only learned, Chugyung only learned of this hearing yesterday. It actually received, very unfortunately, very little public attention during the House, and we think it deserves more.
Well, Mr. Parker, I think, didn't the Anchorage Daily News have a full front page spread on this thing in color?
Yeah.
And we do also have a 5-day notice to the public when these bills are being heard. Okay, well, my concern was your statement about, you know, the public getting enough public hearings on this thing. Okay, any other questions for the committee? Okay, we're going to go out to Dillingham to Alice Ruby. State your name and affiliation, please.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Alice Ruby. I'm a council member for the city of Dillingham, which is a first-class city that is very familiar with Title 29 planning powers. I'm also the chairperson of the Bristol Bay CRSA Board, which oversees the coastal management program for 10 communities, including Dillingham, within the unorganized borough. I'm also the land manager for Chugyung Limited, which is a larger and more successful exit corporation for Dillingham, Ecock, and Portage Creek. And we have an active and effective land management program in place. Although I'm mainly testifying on behalf of the Bristol Bay CRSA Board, my comments on House Bill 259 are also based on municipal and land management experience and also the positions taken by the city of Chugyung. We're very concerned about
this is Randy Phillips. You might have misunderstood me. This bill was introduced March 26, 1993, which is last year. Went through the CRA committee, House 2994, Resources 32394, Finance 4794. And then it was referred to our committee. That's the legislative history of the bill. So the bill's been around a year. Any questions? Okay. Next person we're going to go to, and if I mispronounce your name, please forgive me. It's Terry
Hefferly.
Hefferly. I was going to say Hoferly. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Terry Hefferly. I am the executive officer for the Bristol Bay Native Association. Bristol Bay Native Association represents or has its members about 90% of the 1,700 people that reside in the Lake and Peninsula Borough. I'm testifying today because I was asked to do so by a Native allotment holder who has a Native allotment within the boundaries of the Lake and Peninsula Borough. I'd like to just point out that there are over 466 of such Native allotment parcels within the Bristol Bay Borough. The Native allotment owner who asked me to testify on his behalf was quite alarmed to find out that this particular piece of legislation existed, and is concerned about the possible impact that it might have upon the value, the future value, and his continued use and enjoyment of his Native allotment. It appears as though the land which the Lake and Peninsula Borough intends to select on the shores of Lake Iliamna completely surround his particular Native allotment. The point of my testimony, to be very brief, is to ask you to hold this bill over. I understand, Mr. Chairman, that there has been news stories in the Anchorage Daily News. It's not a newspaper of wide circulation, even here in Dillingham, much less in Conneaut and Keonic and Don Dalton. I think that I would just ask that this bill be held over, if possible, until another legislative session, and that the Lake and Peninsula Borough be encouraged to hold public hearings informing various interested members of their community about the bill, about its purpose and intent, and allow them to comment on this particular piece of legislation. In the Lake and Peninsula Borough Comprehensive Plan, it outlines the fact that they would like to establish several processes by which individuals, citizens within the borough, could have input on land transactions. And we're looking at probably the single largest land transaction that the Lake and Peninsula Borough will ever have. And I'm concerned that there is so little information out to the residents of the borough and to communities, private land owners, and village corporations who own land that may be impacted by the passage of this bill. Thank you very much.
Terry, Senator Taylor liked your comments about the Anchorage Daily News. Any questions? Okay, we'll go on to the next person. Both these people are from Homer, Angela and Ted Gerken. We can do a duet here, I'd appreciate it.
Hello, I'm Angela Gerken, and I'm representing Iliamna Lodge, but I'm also representing myself as a resident of Iliamna. I grew up there and went all the way through high school there. I'm very concerned about this issue. We only found out about it because of the article in the Daily News, and I find it very suspicious that the Lake and Peninsula Borough insists that they're putting this land transfer through for its residents, but we don't know anything about it, and it's been out for what, a year? The main concern I have is the development issue that they do say, the person said before, that they're not going to sell it, but that they are going to lease land for new lodges and new development. Also, the Cameco line, which no one has addressed yet, the Lake and Penn wants the surface rights to the area and the acreage around the mine, and I we have to build the roads to get the minerals out. This is a huge issue. I think the taxes that they would get from Cominco would be significant. However, the damage that it would do to our fisheries in that area is significant. This is one of the largest mines in the state, and the Lake of Penn would stand to benefit. However, I do want to point out that the Lake of Penn borough is more of a board rather than a residence. The Lake of Penn borough started out as a school district. In the last 5 years, they have really pushed to become more. This land grant issue would give them a huge power base. And so far, they've been taxing the commercial fishermen, and I do not know where this money is going. They said in the Daily News that they have a budget of $3.8 million, yet they're still going to Juneau to ask for money. Where is this money being spent? If this legislation goes through, I think it needs to be looked at a little more closely. What benefits the residents of the Lake of Penn borough will actually receive, and how they're already conducting themselves. If we're going to give them state land that's already protected, that is classified as wilderness and vital fishery habitat, it really needs to be looked at what's going to be done with this land. As a landowner, I'm very concerned because we're already being taxed and waived for access. The whole issue of land ownership and who has access is very important, and I'm concerned that we will be put out of business, which that has been my livelihood since I was 9 years old. So I really would like to hear from more of the public and more of the landowners in our area, and the fact that we have not had a chance to really talk to one another because of the time that we've known about the spill. And thank you for this opportunity to talk.
Angela, and this goes for everybody else who's testified. If you hang on, we have a whole bunch of people here in Juneau that can answer some of your questions. And they're writing the questions now. Hopefully, when they get the chance to testify, they'll answer your questions. So please stand by. Questions? Senator Taylor, question? Let me get this straight. You live in Homer, but you have a lodge where?
We have a lodge in Iliamna, on the shore of Lake Iliamna. And I'm only living in Homer in the winter. I mean, I'm leaving in 2 weeks to be out at the lodge. And I lived there year-round until I graduated from high school.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll have some answers there for you.
Thank you.
Next person is Ted Gerken, and I assume you and Angela are related.
Yeah, this is Ted Gerken. I'm in Homer also. We winter now in Homer. We moved to Iliamna 18 years ago. Starting the lodge, Iliasca Lodge. We've been operating it now for, this will be our 18th season. We've been there a lot longer than the Lake of Peninsula Borough. They've only been in existence 5 years. And this land grab looks like one of the largest land grabs attempted in the state of Alaska by a borough that not only has only been around just a few years. We don't really even need a borough there. Very interesting that they tax us. We have to spend quite a bit of money to maintain our operation out there into the borough, and we have received absolutely zero benefits from this tax money that we've been spending. I don't know where they're sending all the money they're getting already. The second point is our business is based upon a wilderness setting. Actually, there's too many lodges in the Bristol Bay drainage already. During the summers, we'll fish many streams, and a lot of these streams now are seeing overcrowding by visiting anglers. If the Bristol Bay or the Lake and Peninsula Borough wants to lease out more land to put in more lodges, we're all going to lose by this effort. There is a limit to the resource that we're fishing for, the trout and the salmon and the shark. There's a limit to this. And in order to maintain a reasonable balance, we shouldn't encourage too many lodges out there than we already have, because too many of the places are already overcrowded. Thank you for your time.
Questions for the committee? Okay, down in Kenai, Keith Harsh.
Yeah, this is Keith Hirsch. I'm not representing anybody. I'm just a concerned citizen. And again, about everything that has been said, I agree with, and I don't have much more to say, except I don't think the general public has been aware of this, and lots of people from this area fly over there for their vacation in the Bristol Bay area, and no one until that article in the newspaper came out was even aware of this existence.
Does that conclude your testimony?
Yes, sir. It sure does.
Okay. Questions for the committee?
No, sir. Okay. No way.
Okay. Jerry Liboff, Dillingham, please.
Liboff.
Being corrected by some of my colleagues here.
Good morning, Senators. This is Jerry Liboff, and thanks to your colleagues for correcting you.
Yeah.
I'll be really short. I'm the vice chair of the Bristol Bay CRSA board. I'm also the general manager of Kwinnick Native Corporation. I live in Kwinnick. The only thing I want you folks to do is to put this thing off a bit and give some more opportunity for public hearings, specifically out of some of these villages affected. I just made a swing through all the Lake and Peninsula villages last 3 or 4 weeks from Leblanc, Olive, and Dalton, as well as most of the villages on this side from Tobiac, including Studiac and Eklof. All these villages can be impacted by this decision, and literally no one in any of these villages had any idea that this was being proposed. I think we've got to have more opportunity for people in the villages to discuss this and have an opportunity to realize what's going on and make their comments felt. Nobody knows about this out there, believe me, because I've just been on all the villages, including me. I didn't hear about this thing until a week ago, and I think you folks better just kind of hold off on it for a legislative session and encourage some public hearing. Let some people get a chance to voice their opinion and then vote on it. And that's my testimony. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Taylor?
Yeah, I just had one. Could you give me an estimate of how much privately owned Angster land exists in or around the area we're talking about? Privately land that might be leased to someone that might want to put in a lodge?
Senator, if you're asking me, I'm going to take you a real ballpark wild guess, but if I had to guess, it's probably in the affected area. This is probably someplace in the range of 300 to 400,000 acres of corporation land, maybe closer to 500,000, okay?
Yeah, I just wanted to know that, because it would seem to me that that land would be available if someone so chose to lease it out for a lodge. I think you'd have to go through quite a process if they wanted to sell any of it because of the amendments to the Act, but it would seem that that land is currently available for each of the evils that we've been told about this morning.
Jerry, any response to that?
No response. He's probably correct. I haven't.
All right.
I'm just concerned that I think we've got to get the word out to the people in the village affected, both within the borough and adjacent to the borough, of this land selection and the possible benefits and possible losses to them by doing this, and let them voice their opinion and see where it goes. I think nobody, literally, and this is true because I've been to all these places, I live in all of them, nobody realizes that this bill is imminent to be passed or not passed, and I think we need to get some more input. I see it with my own eyes because I've been out there, and I think you folks will be doing a service to the constituents out here if you don't give them an opportunity to at least be aware of it and give them an opportunity to speak on it. And that's basically my comment. Thank you.
We're going to That concludes the teleconference around the state before we go back down here in Juneau. Is there anybody else on the teleconference system outside of Juneau that wants to testify or has not testified? Okay, we're going to go here to Juneau. Sylvia Cassidy.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sylvia Cassidy. I'm from Homer. I'm currently here in Juneau as a volunteer lobbyist for the Alaska Environmental Lobby. I think I have about 3 minutes of testimony. House Bill 259 proposes a general grant land entitlement of 187,000 acres of land to the Lake and Peninsula Borough. And the Department of Natural Resources calculates that the borough will be entitled to approximately 11,600 acres. The Alaska Environmental Lobby has two major concerns about the consequences of this bill. First, it's an excessively large land grant, and it will be a precedent for other boroughs that incorporate in the future. It would allow an open-door policy for boroughs to request and get more land than boroughs have previously been granted. That is, 10% of the available lands classified VUU, vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land. The proposed Lake and Penn land grant of 187,000 acres is more than 16 times the amount of land identified by DNR, the Department of Natural Resources. The Department of Natural Resources estimates that 116,000 acres are currently classified as VUU, and 10% of this is 11,600 acres. Since one of the main reasons for transfer of state land to boroughs is to provide them with revenue opportunities for municipal services, we believe a per capita comparison is a fair method of evaluating entitlements. The Lake and Penn request is disproportionate to entitlements received by other boroughs on a per capita basis. I've given you a chart that we've prepared based on entitlements received, acres received, at the time that the 1978 statute was passed. And the populations were, as of 1978, and the per capita acres are on the right-hand column.
This about the acres, that's the city's anchorage right there. Population's not including the borough. Yeah, it's this green letterhead. It says the Alaska Environmental Lobby. It's on the back side of that letter. I'm sorry, proceed.
Yes, the average land entitlement to non-urban boroughs throughout Alaska is approximately 6 acres per resident. A grant of 187,000 acres to Lake and Penn would equate to 112 acres per resident. This would set a dangerously high precedent, and it could encourage excessive requests from future organized boroughs again. As to the Alaska Environmental Lobby's second concern, we believe the state should retain control of and protect unique, irreplaceable resources when it is in the best interest of the state and the public to do so. As an example of what is in the best interest of the state and public, three memoranda written by the State of Alaska Department of Fish and Game in February and March of this year identified the proposed Lake and Penn land selections as very high public interest land, with most of the parcels identified being classified as wildlife habitat. Wildlife habitat is not available for borough selection under current regulations. These wildlife habitats include spawning areas critical to Bristol Bay. They are the site of the world's most productive sockeye salmon fishery, as well as being access points to world-class sport fishing areas in the Bristol Bay area. Also, the Department of Fish and Game expressed concern in these memoranda that the Lake and Penn proposed land selections appears to be contrary to legislative intent. And this is because House Bill 259 would result in further fragmenting ownership of the most important fish and wildlife habitat in Alaska, the Bristol Bay drainages. The department states that it sees no justification for the legislature in abrogating the statutory entitlement of the borough, increasing it by what it calls 6 times, thereby threatening existing uses and creating conflicts over allocation and threatening habitat. The department is concerned also with Lake and Penn's initial proposed selection of long, narrow strips of land along major waterways, which could restrict public use and encourage development in sensitive, productive fish and wildlife habitats. These long, narrow strips violated 4 to 1 the limitations of land selection. We understand that the borough has stated in hearings that it would modify its selections relative to the width of strips, but we would be more comfortable if House Bill 259 were amended to prohibit boroughs from receiving any lands identified as important fish and wildlife habitat and or important public resource lands. In conclusion, we recognize that Lake and Penn's right has a right to select lands after their incorporation, but we believe it's inequitable for Lake and Penn to receive 187,000 acres. It's far too much of our land to grant to them. We recommend that the committee takes a hard look at the amount and type of lands being requested and decide if this proposed Lake and Penn borough entitlement would protect the best interests of the state and the public and protect the world-class public resources found in this region of Alaska. Thank you.
Questions? Mr. Taylor, go slowly, softly.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but I thought you said something like wildlife habitat, pursuant to a memorandum from the Department of Fish and Game, is not available for conveyance to a borough?
It's not available. It's not VUU land. It's not classified as vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land.
The land that it has been classified as a habitat area,
right,
that means it no longer falls within that category?
It is not classified as vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land.
So any place the Department of Fish and Game determines is, quote, wildlife habitat land, then it's off limits for people?
I think it's the Department of Natural Resources.
Was that where the memo came from?
No, this is from the Fish and Game.
Mr. Taylor, we'll have somebody from Game testify here shortly.
Well, I just wondered if we had that. I'd like
to the memo.
To that effect, I'd sure like to see that. I didn't know that we'd made that as a policy call around here that people couldn't use things if animals were using them.
This memorandum is from Frank Rue, and it's to Ron Swanson. It's dated March the 18th, 1984, the Department of Fish and Game, and it states at the bottom of the first page, and I'll quote, "The process to be followed to transfer lands that are currently classified as wildlife habitat, parenthesis, a classification not falling within the definition of vacant, unappropriated, or unreserved lands which are eligible for borough selection," close paren.
Sylvia, if you can provide that copy.
Sure.
Shirley, would you make sure the members get a copy of that memo?
Were you aware, too, of the
Mr. Taylor,
the question that I asked of one of the previous gentlemen on the teleconference about the amount of privately owned land in this same area?
Yes.
Is probably four times the acreage that we're talking about here. I would assume then your organization opposed any transfer of private lands to these people either.
Our organization is opposed to excessive transfer of land to a borough. Excessive in terms of what has been done with other boroughs, which is basically 10% of VUU lands.
You wouldn't oppose it then if we took this same land and instead of transferring it to the borough, we transferred it?
Excuse me, Senator?
Instead of transferring this land to the borough, you would not oppose it if we transferred it to the individuals living out there?
I would have to refer back to the director of the lobby on that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor, for being so nice. Mr. Zuroff.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zuroff, for those in italics, well, never mind. Mr. Zuroff.
Oh, I'm sure that his
reputation has a very, very strong opinion, so I was trying to tone it down.
It certainly has gone beyond the halls of this chamber here. But I just questioning here. I don't know how they came up with the formula of 187,000 acres, but testimony was made earlier there that this represents less than 3% of the state-owned land in the borough, meaning that there's 97% other state land in the borough. That's discounting private land, Native corporation land, whatever.
But the basis on which land grant entitlements are transferred is on the basis of vacant, unreserved, unappropriated lands, not on the total lands that are in a borough. It's the specific lands which are classified by DNR.
Further questions? Sylvia, well organized.
Thank you.
Ron Swanson from the Department of Natural Resources. Please state your name, affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Swanson, Director, Division of Land. I guess you can blame this bill partly on me. I've worked with various municipalities for several years, particularly boroughs, trying to figure out what the best way to come up with entitlement is. The straight formula of 10% vacant, unappropriate, unreserved is not, I guess, fair for every particular borough. The land needs for residents of the particular borough, the type of land it's owned, the income potential varies all over the state, particularly from urban to rural areas. So the Lakeland Peninsula Borough approached me for a way to figure out what their entitlement should be, and I told them it would be under the current legislation, it would be about 11,000 acres. I also encouraged them then to look at all the state-owned land within the municipality, working with their local residents, hopefully, to figure out what type of land they wanted to own for what particular purposes, and that's the process we went through. They've identified the land they would like to select. It's shown on these maps. They're not their actual selections, but it shows the type of things they want. And they originally identified about 200,000 acres. The Department of Natural Resources reviewed those particular selections in light of the various area plans that we have in place, along with the Department of Fish and Game. And we basically concur with about 100 to 125,000 acres of those selections, and we have concerns about the rest. I'm sure over time that those particular selections can be addressed. So the particular process of figuring out entitlement for each borough is I guess my recommendation has come here. I've never been able to find a formula that works for every municipality. And I know this is a very political process, but I think it's one that should be more open to the public, where they can work through the local municipality and work through the state to figure out what type of land and for what purposes it can be used. And the selections that the Lake and Penn Borough are definitely economic related, mainly commercial recreational type lots or type parcels of land, and some mineral potential lands that could raise revenue down the road. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Mr. Adams, then Mr. Taylor.
So what you're saying to this committee, you would like to see legislation for each borough with the allocated amount of whatever land we feel we should give each one. And the next bill we have has a 10% of VUs of municipal boundaries. So you're stating that you'd rather see us work on separate piece of legislation for each borough versus the 10%?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adams, that is what I'm saying. I say I've worked with various borough governments for several years, and I've just never found a formula of any type that's fair. I think it's much better for the state, for the administration, and for the local municipality to come in and present their case and let the legislature set the policy for what they feel the entitlement should be and for what type of purposes.
Mr. Finished? Mr. Adams? Finished?
No, I'm finished.
Mr. Taylor?
Ron, you got this memo from Mr. Rue in 94, here, March 1894. Mm-hmm. I had understood from the previous person's testimony that somehow wildlife habitat fell within one of the classifications of vacant, unreserved, or unappropriated, but upon reading it, in fact, it says it does not. So as a consequence, the concerns expressed about wildlife habitat being identified, that does not act as a barrier within the definition of vacant, unreserved, or unappropriated, does it?
Now, Mr. Chairman, Senator
Taylor.
That's not
a clear way to phrase it.
Well, it's probably easier if I do it this way. Vacant, unappropriated, unreserved is defined in statute, AS 2965-140, as land classified for agricultural, grazing, material, public recreation, or settlement. Those are the type of categories that are conveyed to municipalities and considered as part of their entitlement formula at this point in time. So the answer to your definition is wildlife habitat would not be considered as part of figuring the formula, although municipalities can select wildlife habitat land and then would go through a public process to see if it's appropriate to change the classification. And that is exactly what we'd have to do with the Lake and Penn Borough.
So, where does that show up in statute, or is that just a policy call the department's arrived at? Because Mr. Rue's own word says a classification not falling within that definition.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, that is correct. The definition of VUU is in statute, and that's the one I just read to you. Wildlife habitat is not one of the classifications.
So the department could go out and classify an area as wildlife habitat, at which point it could not be conveyed by the legislature to a borough.
Mr. Chairman, that's essentially correct. Once it's classified that particular category, the department cannot convey it to a municipality unless we change the classification.
Mr. Adams?
Yes. And that's what your bill does in the next bill that's coming up, and that's it should have been under AS 2965-130-10, isn't it? I thought you said 140. 130? That's what we intend to do in the next bill, but
okay. Let's. I have one for you. We got a lot of other people here. Any other further questions? Does DNR have a position on this bill?
We support the bill in concept. We'll leave it up to the legislature to figure out what the entitlement should be.
Okay, that's just clear. What, just clear as mud.
Then how did you come up with 187?
That's the acreage that the former chairman, Senator Adams, that's the figure that the Lake Pinellas Borough came up with that they figured was appropriate based on their land selections. So in reviewing those selections, we don't have concerns with 100 to 125,000 of those.
So let me just make sure. It's 125,000 that you agree with, but it's about 62,000 acres that are questionable right now.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct based on the maps that they gave us.
Could you later on give the committee a map at your convenience, whenever, maybe after this meeting? Make sure to get together my staff personally. Mr. Frank Rood from the Alaska Fish and Game Department. Mr. Rood, state your name and affiliation, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Frank Rood. I'm director of the Habitat and Restoration Division, and I appreciate the warm-up I've received. And you all have some of the information that has been passed back and forth on this issue. Basically, the department has the issue of how whether this is the appropriate number of acres is a concern we would have, but we leave it to you all to decide what's fair. Looking at all the other boroughs, that's really your call as to fairness among the boroughs. We certainly have appreciated the willingness of the Lake and Penn Borough to discuss the lands they would be interested in once they got an entitlement. And certainly, you know, their focus is on land settlement areas, commercial development, mineral development. And that seems appropriate. That's the intent of a municipality, is to generate revenues. Our concerns have been in a couple of areas primarily, really right along the Mulchatna River and Tulare Creek have been the two areas the department has been most concerned that those may remain in state ownership for public use, commercial recreation, public use, subsistence. We've been working with DNR and the borough to find lands which meet the needs of the borough. For instance, we've come up with some idea. Some of the selections they've done are, you know, they select half a lake for commercial development and then retain the rest of the lake in public ownership so people continue to have public access to state lands for hunting, fishing, those sorts of uses. And the borough's been very willing to come up with those kinds of accommodations for continued public access, public use so far. So we've certainly appreciated that. Basically, I think it's very important that the process for selecting the actual lands be the one that's laid out now in statute, which is DNR will go back out to the communities once an entitlement is established and work with the borough and the local communities to figure out which lands are actually going to be selected. And they would, by amending the Bristol Bay Area Plan, for instance, some of the classifications in that plan, the public would have an opportunity, the public that was very involved in coming up with those original classifications and very supportive of them would now have the opportunity to comment on any changes given the new circumstance of a borough formation out there. And I think that's an appropriate way to go. It gives the local people an opportunity to speak to DNR, raise concerns. But at this point, as I say, really our main concerns are those two areas, and the borough's been pretty willing to look elsewhere to find their entitlement. So with that, I'm open to questions.
Questions for the committee? Mr. Taylor?
Yeah, Frank, you've got a couple. I've been furnished copies here of a couple memorandum that you got. One was February 13, 94. Came from Lance Kraske, Regional Supervisor, Region 2 Habitat Restoration Division. There was a couple comments on the second page of his memo that I found very interesting, and I'd like you to comment on them. The first one was that all staff felt strongly it was not in the general public interest to transfer most of these particular tracts of land out of state ownership. And the second one was the reviewers also suggested that if the borough were allowed to select some of the remaining state land in high public interest areas, that they should be required to select large blocks of inland acreage instead of just high-value waterfront. Wouldn't that be totally contrary to any meaningful desires on the part of the borough for land selection? And there's a purpose here in that they want to gain some sort of tax base, some sort of lands they can use. Why should they be punished by being told by the department that they have to take large blocks of inland acreage that are probably of no significant commercial value to anyone?
Kamiko.
Ah, well, they could take that, I guess. That would be worthwhile for them. But I'm having a hard time understanding where. I mean, I don't see the enforcement of a regulation or something here. What we're talking about is staff is deciding what is of high public interest and then excluding the public from its use, the local public from its use. That, to me, is incredible, and I would like your comments on it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, this was in response to the initial proposal, which was a very narrow band along the Mulchatna River, the concern being that a lot of people outside the region, there are a number of users who would want to use who do use the river now, would want to have continued public access, public use. Actually, DNR has a formula right now of the width-to-length ratio has to be 4-to-1 so that boroughs don't just take, or cities don't just take the very heart out of the value, that there has to be some sort of ratio there. And that's a DNR-established rule. What we were looking at is coming up with those lands which made most sense for the borough to manage, for commercial use, development, things like Pebble Copper, lodge sites, lakes that had commercial potential, but then also maintain some of those general public access areas that are heavily used by the general public. And so it's a balancing. And I think the final position of the department has been to try and work with the borough to accommodate both interests, theirs and the general public use access to fish and wildlife. And I think we're starting to move towards an accommodation of both so that they can make revenue, they can generate revenue, and you still retain general public use and access in some key areas.
The both of these memorandum talk about how the public's going to be somehow excluded from utilization of these areas. How would our transferring it out of state ownership to a public entity, that being a borough, how would the public be excluded?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, my understanding of the intent of boroughs in general getting lands is for revenue production. And generally that, if it's a place like a river corridor, is generally by either leasing or selling land for residential lots. Now, this borough has said they're not interested at this time in doing that, but certainly they want to generate revenue. And that would be the concern that you would, in some of these key areas like the Mulchatna River, eventually want to sell lots along that was the entire river corridor. And that, I think, is the eventuality that concerned the department and certainly some of the public out there.
So really what the thrust of what you're saying is that staff within your department is saying that under no circumstances should any of these lands ever be transferred into private ownership.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, not any of these lands. No, that's not what we're saying. In fact,
public interest lands.
Some of the
words you use there.
Right. I think you need to look at the map. If we had a map, it'd be easier to discuss. But for instance, on the upper Mulchatna, there was a land disposal area. We had no problem. That could go. Half Cabin Lakes, no problem. Over on Lake Iliamna, there was a land disposal sale area near Reindeer Bay that ought to go to the borough. Don't have a problem with that kind of thing. But it's when you get a long, thin, down an entire river corridor like the Mulchatna, as opposed to, you know, land sale areas in blocks, that we had some concerns.
Sort of like reapportionment in North Carolina.
That was the concern, not that no lands could be. I mean, we were not objecting to everything by any means.
Yeah, understood, Frank. But it's my understanding that DNR did not follow that 4-to-1 rule when they were making selections of state lands, at least not out of my district. I watched them walk down every single shoreline they could walk down just so they could cut off access to the beach. In particular, they did it right on the island I live on. They didn't follow any 4-to-1 formula, but they're now suggesting that boroughs should follow a 4-to-1 formula.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, that's a DNR policy. I'll let them speak to it.
Understood. He doesn't want to get beat for that.
Yeah.
Okay, does that conclude your testimony?
Yes, it does.
Any further questions from the committee?
Next one.
Okay, we'll go down to Bruce Garrity. And we have two other Mr. Lehman.
Mr. Rupp referred to a map, and eventually I'd like to see a good quality map that identifies some of these lands and the conflict areas and what suggested for appropriation. So if you could request that we at least have access to those, you know, maybe there's one set that we could have.
Mr. Lehman has asked DNR for a map sitting right about 3 feet away from there right now. Okay. So if it's not good enough quality, let me know. Okay, and we'll
be nice if we had a map we could all see.
Yeah. Fish and Game and Natural Resource people, the next hearing, get a big map so we can really take a look at it. Okay, Mr. Garrity, and then we have two others after that.
Mr. Bruce? Chairman, for the record, my name is Bruce Garrity, and I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. We support this bill. We also support the construction or the approach to providing entitlements to especially new municipalities, new boroughs, in this manner. What we've found is that many of DNR's land planning processes occurred prior to the formation of boroughs. This has restricted the availability of land to municipalities, boroughs in particular, to generate revenues, which provide services to the residents of that area. The department believes that local governments often serve the people more adequately than does a government at a distance. And
change that to the next bill.
With that, I think that concludes my remarks, and I'm available for questions.
Questions for the committee? Mr. Zara?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this process of municipal land selection, will that have priority over mental health lands?
No, I believe, Mr. Chairman, Senator Zaroff, no, I believe DNR would have to make a consideration for mental health lands.
So there would not be any
maybe we ought to ask that question, Mr. Zaroff. Maybe we ought to ask that question to Mr. Swanson, because he's from DNR and controls the title of the lands.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Zaroff, the mental health legislation is currently pending in both houses as a designated land list. So if that legislation passes, the mental health land deal is over immediately. It does not have a land selection process. So we know what the mental health lands will be the day that legislation passes.
Okay. But you did say if, though. I mean, if
well, I don't
if
vote.
If it doesn't pass, then
if it doesn't pass, Senator, then we're in for protracted litigation and
okay, well, what about the selection then on the Lake and Penn Borough if this were...
It would probably be held in abeyance until that determination was made.
Mm-hmm. And then, if the bill didn't pass.
Yeah,
yes.
If the mental health doesn't get
mental
resolved,
health, right.
It would be a possible prior lien, so to speak, against any lands that they might select.
That's correct.
Mr. Zara?
Yeah. But, and I guess there was some question there that came up from the people that testified in Bellingham regarding a lawsuit now against some of the land selection up there, or what? I don't know. What effect does that have with the passage of this legislation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Zaroff, the legislation, as I understand it, is by residents of the Nishigate Mulchatin area basically trying to get their area excluded from the Lake and Penn Borough.
Okay, so then if they are successful in their bid, but in the meantime, what happens here if Lake and Penn selects this area or an area that's already in the in their borough designation?
Mr. Zaroff, we would only process selections that are in communication and lawsuit and hold in advance and ultimately decided.
Mr. John, wait, I think we may have an answer here with the last two witnesses. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
And if it's not satisfactory, we'll pursue it with another person. Mr. Garrity, anything further to add?
Mr. Chairman, the only thing that I would add is that rural areas of the state, municipalities there do require a different consideration as far as the population base. If you look back at when the large boroughs were formed in the state, the populations generally were a lot less than they are today, which would affect some people's calculations on how many acres per person, that sort of approach to municipal land entitlements. There is a difference between basically urban settings and or metropolitan type settings and rural settings. The area of land necessary to generate revenue is often much greater. And this acreage number, basically, as you've heard, the lands that they have been discussed, they have general agreement on a number of them. Whether or not the municipality would ever be successful in achieving 187,000 acres is somewhat questionable. It might take several years to attain that, and in case of one borough that I'm aware of, even up to 20 years. So, with that.
Further questions? Okay, we have two more people, Lamar Cotton from the borough, and Karen Brand. I'm assuming you were writing all those questions and to be answered, right? And well, go ahead, Mr. Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lamar Cotton, and I'm here with the Lake and Peninsula Borough. And if I can, I will try to answer some of the questions that were asked by the people on teleconference and other people in the room. Lake and Peninsula Borough was organized 89, and until a couple of months ago, went through about a two-year planning process. Had extensive public hearings, traveled extensively to all the villages, had participation from all the villages since it was both the assembly itself. One of the chief components of the planning process was trying to look ahead. Trying to look ahead where they were going to fund programs that are, for the most part, subsidized or paid for by the state of Alaska. And to make a long story short, one of the key components of that objective was trying to seek other revenues. Obviously, the municipal land entitlement program is one of those programs that, in the long run, well into the next century, could assist communities like Lake Peninsula Borough to fund the bare minimum programs that are required. And obviously, that's chiefly education, followed by economic development, possibly in the future other programs. Through that process, it identified lands, in effect, narrowed it down. There's nothing magical about the 187. They were shooting for 187. In fact, they started at about 500,000 acres and started to whittle it down. The program went on, I think, until actually going through the land selections, as I mentioned, well into this year. The issue of the size, in addition to how they went through it, I think it needs to be noted, as the former speaker mentioned, is that the valuable acre of land in rural Alaska is now, nor will it never be, anything close to an acre of land, let's say, that the Mat-Su Borough obtained under their municipal entitlement, particularly, for example, if it's 10 miles north of Willow and has road access to half the state's population. So to try to quantify or to equate an acre of land received by any rural borough compared to one that has more of an urban setting, to me, is an example of one of the problems with the existing program and why a better process, a more open process of working with DNR that Lake and Penn has done, we feel is a better way to determine an overall number for particularly the new boroughs. Again, the purpose behind the land is the idea, the notion that in the future, if services are going to be provided in rural Alaska, either they're going to pay for them or they're going to go away. So if anything, this borough, in our minds, should be commended for having the foresight to look ahead on how they're going to provide basic services for the residents of their borough. It's been mentioned about how they're going to use the land. Well, the way I understand it, when title is received, there is not a restriction on whether the borough can sell or lease it. Now, the borough's discussions to date has been the principled use of the land would be for commercial recreation, since that's the most likely buyer or user of the property. I don't think it's fair to say that discounts or rules out the possibility that some of those lands could very well be sold in the future. as mentioned by Frank Rue, some of the areas that they have selected have been identified as disposal areas by the state of Alaska. They've also been identified and classified as settlement. So the idea that in a fairly rural setting, that a portion of this land could sometime be in the future set by a future assembly to be sold, I wouldn't discount that. And I think, to be honest about it, I don't think the assembly has any heartburn that private land or land is transferred to private parties, whether it's for leasing or, in fact, it's sold outright. So I don't want to be misleading about that. I think their impression right now is the best way to handle it is to lease it. But one assembly cannot oblige the next assembly, and I don't think it should be. A couple of the other issues people have discussed about use is access. The Lake and Peninsula Borough has agreed to public access to the property that they would own. They would allow for shoreline easements. They themselves have an ordinance that has a fairly restrictive subdivision ordinance. So if land is conveyed, the borough itself has to comply with the ordinance. So it is not going to be some sort of fragmented development. They also have what they call a development permit, which I think is, again, a good example of responsible government, where it requires, if you're moving large amounts of dirt, that the borough, the public, the communities themselves are involved in. So, one, again, there has been a lot of public input by the residents of the borough, village and regionally. The borough has responded to some of their concerns by enacting, like many municipalities have, a subdivision ordinance and other permits, so people are aware if there are changes that occur within their boundaries. The question, too, has been brought up, is this a good precedent? Our argument, it is a good precedent. It's a good precedent for a borough to come to DNR and Fish and Game and say, look, these are what we think we want. What do you think? And in our case, they said, well, we kind of like some of these, but, for example, you started to select the Quijack and the Mulchatin, and we have problems with that. So the borough's response was, fine, we'll take them off the table. We have the same interest. The vast majority of the people who live in Lake Peninsula Borough are either commercial fishermen or involved with commercial recreation. So the concept of the idea that they, as the long-term permanent residents of the area, are going to do something with their land which would have an adverse effect on their own future, I think it's sort of intellectually dishonest. I don't think that's the direction they'd go in. The issue was brought up by Alice Ruby and Senator Jaroff asked it as well about the boundary issue, and this refers back to a dispute that villages north of Lake and Penn have with the Lake and Peninsula Borough when it's first organized. In the spirit of cooperation, the Lake and Peninsula Borough has no interest in selecting any lands in that area until that court case is resolved. The other thing I'd point out is what the borough has put on the table is a proposal. It's a proposal, if you will, to get a reaction from DNR to show that we're trying to work with them. Irrespective of the passage, if this bill passes, the borough has to go back to square one, go through a series with DNR, public hearings for any land that they select. So the public, again, even though they have been involved, contrary to some of the comments that have been made, they have been involved, that the borough, again, would hold public hearings as well as DNR for any of those lands that it would select. So I think, in fairness, the public has not, nor will it be, left out in the process. The other comments that were made by, if I could, just direct them to Alice Ruby about, although I'm a little unclear about what a playing field is, I think the borough seeks the support of the people who live north of them, since, as she mentioned, they too are going to be looking at a borough, and they too have the same problem with the lower salmon prices and other traditional mechanisms of raising revenue, and seek, undoubtedly, in the future, land as well, to, in the long term, and when I say long term, into the next century, as a way to pay for municipal services. Again, Mat-Su Borough, I think, is a good example of how they did this. They went out, sold property in the 60s and 70s, and did two things. They got the receipts, or they got paid for the land, and on top of that, in their case, they put it under tax rules. And in turn, they also made money off the quote, private owner through a tax base. Now, most rural boroughs, for a number of reasons, don't have property tax at this time. But I think even the sale or the leasing of property is a legitimate way to, one, help fund municipalities, and two, promote economic development within their boundaries. The last comment I would make is that I think the legislation is good, not only for this borough, but it does set a good precedent for future boroughs. Most of the boroughs have been organized since the late 80s. have had some kind of legitimate or strong tax base, be it mining in the Northwest Arkansas Borough or the Nally Borough, or fish in Aleutians East or Lake Pen or Yakutat. Outside of the Dillingham area, if you look at the rest of the unorganized borough, there are a few places that have as strong a tax base that are going to be able to support the educational needs and other needs of the region. They're left without another component to help out. Land, although it's not going to solve all the problems, it certainly could be of great assistance for those areas in the unorganized borough to provide, to receive funds to provide services. So in short, we appreciate any support we can get on this bill, and that ends my testimony.
Questions before the committee? Lamar, I have a question. Can you supply the committee with the dates and places for all these public hearings?
It's required by, I certainly can, but for the record, it's a requirement, as with any municipality, if a planning commission or a assembly is having a meeting, it's required to put public notice in all communities, which it does, all 17 communities, and it has done since it's been incorporated.
I'd appreciate it if you would supply that to the committee. That seems to be a concern to some people.
Well, in fairness, to the borough, maybe the concern is outside of the borough. Now, the borough is not required by law to go out to other communities outside the boundaries, not unlike any other borough, to notify them what they're up to. So maybe they're not aware of it, but I don't feel like it's a burden upon the borough to notify communities when their activities have no relationship to those communities outside there.
So. I'm just asking for within the powers of the borough.
Certainly.
Okay. And what I think I'll do is I'm going to pull something a little unusual. People on a teleconference, after Karen's finished, if you have any further questions, ask it. It'll be after the members have asked their questions for a final wrap-up.
Okay, I just scratched off the questions that I believe Mr. Cotton. I forget who initially made the question. Alaska statute encourages the land be transferred to local governments so that they can provide some governments. I just want to reiterate that, you know, we've just closed out the budget that cut 30% off municipal assistance and revenue sharing. So, I also want to reiterate to some of the folks on teleconference who inquired about this. This bill does in no way shorten the process that Lake and Penn will have to go through as far as public hearings, making public testimony, opposition or support of certain land selections. DNR still has the power, as in Title 38, to deny any selection that they don't feel that they want to give up. They will reconvey others, and Lake and Penn will have to go and reselect other lands. A couple of other things that came up in the questioning. Ted Gerken had asked about this being a dangerous precedent. I can tell you from other committee meetings that we've had that this is the first. There have been a couple of other boroughs, such as Denali, who have been formed since this municipal land entitlement was in statute, and I think we can anticipate in future legislatures seeing other newly formed boroughs going through the same process that Lake and Penn has already gone through. They've just taken 2 years to pick out land selections. Denali also does not have a land entitlement, and if the formula does not work in their particular case, I think we can anticipate seeing something from them in the next couple of years.